Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We're so glad to have you with us on this chilly fall day. Our topic is serious: money. Is it working for you or are you working for it? How do you get smart about it? How do you manage not to get trapped by it? There's much fuss about America's declining financial literacy rate. One report that I posted on our website, alaskapublic.org, point blank gives America an F for financial literacy because they could only answer 3 of 5 simple questions about money and only 61% could do that. So, we just don't know the answers to some of our financial questions. And even though the economy's gotten a little bit better, more people are not saving for retirement and more are experiencing bankruptcy and foreclosure. Student loan debt is very big news. Nearly 20 million Americans attend college every year, and of that group, 60% borrow annually to help cover costs. The Anchorage Daily News recently profiled a number of Alaskans struggling with their student loan debt, and there's lots of national stories about that. So where are you in all this? Do you go month to month on your paycheck? Are you living on credit? Do you enjoy retail therapy? Are you still going to school because you really can't afford to pay back your student loans? We've got experts in the studio today to unpack your money woes and guide you to new ways and better ways of thinking about money. So please welcome Rebecca Matrasova, who works on financial literacy for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, very focused on young people, student loans, credit, saving. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And Jackie Brisky is a certified public accountant who does financial literacy outreach work. And she also has clients from all age groups, including older married couples, divorcing couples, kids learning how to save. And hopefully sometime during the hour, we hope to hear from Colin Ryan, who's a comedian who talks to college kids about money. He's on the college circuit. And he was just up in Alaska talking to college kids here. And based on that, we invited him to give us a call and tell us what he thinks about Alaska's college students and how well they understand money. So we may hear from Colin during the hour. All right, so I'm going to start off with Rebecca because we did just sort of tail into that student loan issue. It's big headlines. I've read so many stories of students who drop out, or I heard stories of students who can't afford to quit school even though they want to get out because they can't face the loan. So, Rebecca, your Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education really has a focus on financial literacy. Why and how do you begin the process of bringing people along?
Well, Kathleen, at ACPE, our mission is to promote access to and success in education and training beyond high school. So we're really focused on that because despite all of the bad news that we hear about students getting into trouble with student loans and debt as they pursue their education, education overall is still a great investment in your future. The average student with a bachelor's degree, a graduate, will earn over $1 million more in their lifetime than someone with just a high school diploma. So that's
very
a big difference.
Very important, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but with the cost of education rising, it certainly has become more important for students to really develop a good plan to understand why they're going to school, to have a plan for how to complete their education, and to really do their research on how to pay for education. There's a lot of financial aid that's available, free money, grants and scholarships, and certainly once you do start looking at student loans, you need to understand the consequences of your loans, your future earning potential, and you need to understand how to get the best deal and not get in over your head.
You know, I want to throw out the phone number because I introduced these wonderful guests and we're going to talk about money and I forgot to tell people how to call you. So I hope you're listening. I hope you've got questions about your credit card or your student loans. You can call us at 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, we can welcome a call at 1-888- 353-5752, or you can also send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We have lots to talk about, but we welcome your questions because that's the reason we're here, really. If you've got credit questions, we're not giving financial advice out, but we are giving the big picture. So, Rebecca, let's go back to you just briefly and talk a little bit about how not to get over your head. There's there's for-profit colleges, there's nonprofit colleges, there's subsidized loans, unsubsidized loans. Help me walk in the door as a 17-year-old going, okay, I want a four-year degree. My family has a little bit of money for me, or I've got a little bit of money, but I need loans. What are some of your first questions that you might ask that student?
Well, I think the very first step for the student really comes down to selection of your college and selection of your program.
Mm-hmm. Going to that sort of, why am I here and what am I going to do with my life?
Right. And one of the things that we work to encourage is the development of a personal career and learning plan from high school or even middle school age. But certainly that's a process that you can begin at any point in your life.
Uh-huh.
So that you understand what your career goals are, what a good fit for you is, that you understand what training and education will bring you to that goal. And then you can evaluate your earning potential.
Mm-hmm.
And factor that into the equation. The other side of that is finding the college or training program that's the right fit for you that offers training in that field.
You know, one of the things I've heard about getting ready for the show was that one rule of thumb was don't borrow more than you can earn when you finish your degree that first year, and that there's calculators out there. So if you say, I want to be a nurse and I know I can earn X when I get out, that gives you the ceiling, that gives you the number that you should really be thinking about. Is that something you would encourage?
That's a good rule of thumb. It's one that I've heard before. One of the rules that we like to highlight is a little bit more complicated than that. It's making sure that your student loan payment won't be more than about 8 to 12% of your income after you graduate. You can go a little higher if you know that your earnings potential is going to increase substantially over time. And that just factors in interest rates that differ. For example, a $5,000 loan at 3.86%, the current federal rate,
uh-huh.
You're looking at about a $50 a month payment. That same amount at a higher 7.3% rate, you're looking at about a $59 payment. So those amounts add up differently depending on how much interest you pay. So we advise folks to look at your payment compared to your income as opposed to just the flat dollar amount that you're borrowing.
When we were talking, getting ready for the show, one of the things you mentioned was to be careful if you're at a for-profit college or a nonprofit college, be careful about what's being offered to you, because sometimes it can be hard to understand what the total amount is that you're signing up for. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, and I think what we were talking about was private versus public,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to for-profit versus nonprofit.
Okay.
There are a lot of private nonprofit colleges out there as well. And when you're comparing among different nonprofit institutions, you've got some that cost significantly more when you just look at their tuition and fees, and you've got some that cost less. Oftentimes, your public schools will cost significantly less than your private. However, if they're both nonprofit, they're still worth looking at. And don't just look at that tuition and fees. Look at your net price. There are great calculators out there, for example, through a federal student aid, for you to actually evaluate the net price. And that'll factor in all of the financial aid that's available to you. A lot of times, some of the more expensive institutions will offer more financial aid in terms of scholarships, grants, which is money that you don't have to pay back, or loans, which is money that you do have to pay back, that will bring you to a different total net price. So don't discount something that costs more. Until you've actually looked at the net price and seen how financial aid plays into that.
How there might be some grants, there might be some aid that you don't necessarily have to pay back. Yeah. I want to shift over to Jackie a little bit. And, I'm imagining a 17-year-old really won't have a lot of financial literacy, but I'm wondering if you have families where the family's coming in because they've got a kid headed to college and nobody has much financial literacy. And do you do some coaching on that?
Yes, I do. Oftentimes, it's the families, and sometimes it starts when they're very, very young. You know, the parents will come in and we'll talk about, my child's only 3 years old, but I want him to go to school and I want him to go to college, to higher education, to trade school or something along that line. And how do I start saving now? I'm never going to be able to afford to send them to, you know, any of the big Ivy League schools, but I want to be able to at least help them along.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the things that we have to talk about, it's a nasty word, and it starts with a B, and it's a budget.
Mm.
And people don't.
Ouch.
I know. It is. It's a horrible word, and people don't like it, so we talk about a plan.
Uh-huh.
So let's just come up with a plan. But you really do need to look at further down the road, 10, 15 years down the road, because the money will grow exponentially if you start early.
Uh-huh.
If you start when the teenager is 15 or 16 years old, you don't have enough time to accumulate much money to put toward their college.
So really, you do need to be thinking about it when you're three, or when your child is three.
When the child's born.
Yeah, when they're born.
When the child is born. And there are tax-advantaged plans that you can set up, like a 529 plan, which does not give you a tax deduction, but what it allows you to do is put money aside for their college education, and when that money is earning interest or dividends, any kind of investment income, you're not going to be paying the tax on it at the time that it's,
yeah.
and as long as it's being
yeah.
used for education. The ability to put your permanent fund away, I see that over and over again. With families that come in and their permanent fund is spent before they even get it. It's spent as soon as they've signed up in January.
Mm. A vacation plan for Hawaii?
It's a vacation plan, or it's, you know, to buy a new boat or a snowmobile or whatever
yeah.
it happens to be. But I have occasionally had families that have come in and every year the child's permanent fund goes into their savings account. And that's where it stays.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to our listeners, because I'd love to know, if you're carrying a lot of student loan debt, tell us your story. You know, how did you get in there? Did you know what you were doing? Or did you just assume everything would be fine? Or did you not understand what you were actually signing up for? Or if you're managing your debt very well, we'd love to hear about it. We'd love to hear stories of success. I mean, this does not have to be total doom and gloom and deprivation. You know, maybe you've really developed that ability to look into the future and delay that gratification because you want something else. So think about giving us a call at 550-8433. We'd love to hear your stories. Or hometownalaskapublic.org, that's for our emails. So let's see, I know just as we were starting the program, we were talking with someone who just bought a house, and they said, please explain credit. So let's jump into that, Jackie, because that's, a lot of us have credit cards, a lot of us are living on those credit cards. Tell us what minefields are there for us.
Oh, there's a lot of minefields when it comes to the credit cards. The more credit you have, if you have credit available that's not being used, that's a good thing because it actually adds to your credit score. And I'm not an expert on how to determine the credit score. However, if you're not using the credit, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you have credit available and you're maxed out on most of your credit cards and you've got loan debts out there, that's going to decrease your credit score.
Mm.
So the key is to have your credit cards, pay them off monthly. And if it's too big to do that at this point, work toward that goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plan.
Right. So think about it and budget, right?
Unfortunately, that word comes up again. And I'll give you an example. I'm looking at my own credit card statement. I had a whopping month last month.
She's brave to bring in her credit card statement.
But I will tell you, I pay it off every month.
Okay. I was afraid to ask that, but I'm glad that you just volunteered that. Yeah.
I do pay it off every month. But there's a $4,000 balance on this statement. And there's a little notice on it that tells you, and it's now required to be upfront and not hidden on the back part of the statement, it tells you that if you pay only the minimum balance, which in this case is $40, it will take me 21 years to pay off this $4,000 balance. And my total that I will have paid over that 21 years is $8,000. if I just pay them, if I pay $136, so not the $40 minimum, but $136.73.
And not the whole amount.
So you're, not the whole amount.
Yeah, because you can't. $4,000 is too much.
Right. But $136.73, I will have it paid off in 36 months, so 3 years.
Versus 21.
Versus 21 years.
Just take your age and add 21 years and think, I'll own this television set when I'm 42.
Yeah. Or worse yet, it's not the television set. It's going out to dinner and spending $50 at dinner and then taking 21 years to pay it off.
Oh, God, that's painful to think about. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the other key to this is that not only do you have to pay the $136.73 a month, you cannot charge anything more on this credit card. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it will never end.
Right.
It will never end.
Right, right.
So that's one of the keys, is that as you're paying this, and this is not a real high interest credit card, but as you're paying on the credit card, you have to have it in the back of your mind, how am I going to pay for this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where is the money going? Where's the money going to come from? Because eventually you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
One of the things I see a lot are auto reoccurring charges. So you do a monthly fee for either a cable company or cell phone or whatever, and it just goes on the credit card and you never think of it again. A lot of people don't even look at their credit card statements, especially now with as many people as are on the internet. A lot of people are doing their banking on the internet. They don't even get paper statements.
Do you advise against that, Jackie?
I personally like getting the paper statements. And a couple of reasons, is particularly for businesses,
mm-hmm.
because the when they're available online, they're available for a certain length of time, generally not more than 3 to 5 years.
Oh.
If you should need a credit card statement after that, you're going to pay a research fee for
Ouch.
Them to go back and dig that out for you.
Let me tell our listeners we're talking to a certified public accountant here who really knows the ins and outs of these things. So if you've got questions like that, I did not know that. I thought it was good for the environment for me not to be getting my statements by paper. So that's Jackie Brisky. She's from Eagle River, I think. Right, Jackie?
I am. My company is Consulting Professionals of Alaska.
And I found Jackie by sort of Googling Alaska and credit and or Alaska and financial literacy, and up popped the a local Alaska chapter of accountants who were out at the Bear Paw Festival with a booth on financial literacy, and I thought, this woman's going to care. She's going to care. And you do. I mean, I can really hear it, you know. It's kind of like let me help you. It doesn't have to be so bad.
And we want to help. And it's amazing that people don't want the help.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Bear Paw, and I was telling you this yesterday. We've done it twice now. We did it in 2011, and we did it this last summer. And in 2011, we gave out savings bonds. And we gave out a savings bond each of the 3 days of the Bear Paw. And all we needed was their name and their phone number or email address to contact them. And we could not get people to sign up for free money.
They were suspicious.
They didn't want free money. This last summer, we gave out a piggy bank full of money. And there was about $100 of a combination of coins and bills in the piggy bank. And we had it there, and we'd say, okay, take a guess. Give us your guess. And they'd write it down. They'd say, all right, now we need your phone number or an email. And they go, oh, no, I'm not interested.
Because we have to call you when you win.
Exactly. But they didn't want to give us that. So we were trying to give away free money. They were not interested. We have these magnets that go in your refrigerator that have 20 ways to save money, 20 ways to feed the pig. Even trying to hand these out, a lot of people would go, no, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know what that's about. I mean, there's actually we may be giving. I think I heard a financial literacy show the other night where a young woman, her boyfriend was going to turn 30, and she said, you know, I'd like as a gift to start a retirement account for him. He really poo-poos this because he's 30. But it's something I'd like to do. And his company has a 401k, but they don't contribute to it. So he just doesn't think it's worth it, you know. And so, but the financial counselors were like, okay, so do you have a retirement account? No. And how much debt do you have? And so they sort of drew this out, and they eventually said, you need to use your money on your debt. And, you know, go get him a book, or get him a, you know, find out something he likes and get him something that you can spend a smaller amount of money on. But don't be giving away your hundreds of dollars that you should be applying to your own debt. So really a fun show, because they talked a lot about how we don't talk about money.
We don't. And parents, I think, are very hesitant to talk about money with their children. I know when I was growing up, that was certainly the case. And it's really when they're children that they learn about money and they learn how to handle money.
Yeah.
And it really starts at a very, very early age. You can't all of a sudden turn 18 and know how to manage money.
Right. Right when the doors open, you know, when the credit. I read something the other day that the average college freshman gets 8 credit card offers their first week of college. And if you really don't know what it means to not pay off your bill every month, and that you may be paying for this TV or dinner 21 years down the road, you know. So, you know, I want to ask you, why do you think our financial literacy is so low? And I'm just asking for your opinion, or, you know, you're out in the community, this is what you do. Sometimes I think it's about advertising, making us want all these things, and, you know, maybe we just think we're bad at math and we just really can't deal with it. I mean, what do you guys think? Why are Americans struggling so much with this?
I think part of it is our lifestyle. We are so accustomed to having, such an awesome lifestyle that we have in this country. We're a generous people. We're an affluent nation overall. And I think the more we have, the more we want. My husband and I visit Belize quite frequently, and there's a gentleman there who grew up in this little hut on the beach, beautiful area, and he has a sign that's fashioned out of an old coat hanger, rusty coat hanger, that hangs on his tree, and the sign says, "Needs, not wants."
Mm.
And if you just pull back and think about that for a minute, how many things do we need versus how many things we actually just want?
Right, right.
And if we lived like that, if we spent our money like that, it would look different.
I mean, there's lots of discussion about the income level of the middle class stagnating over the last generation, but we don't live as if our income hasn't been rising. We've turned to our credit cards, or we've refinanced our house so it's almost like we were a little bit set up. I guess, you know, you might think, oh, it'll turn out fine. It'll, you know, but it doesn't seem to be. It almost seems like we're in a reset here with finances. And that's part of how we got into this dilemma, because we did have credit cards and we could extend the quality of our life on our credit cards.
Absolutely. And I heard a statistic a couple of years ago, the fastest growing industry in America is the self-storage industry.
Oh, dear.
We have so much stuff that we can't have it all in our house. We have to rent a place. And think about the garages
that you can't park in, even in Alaska.
But there are garage condos now that you can buy into. Anchorage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that you can have, you know, your own little man cave or woman cave, your own little space. Drive around and look at the self-storage units.
Yeah.
And they're not all from people who, you know, have just a really tiny place that they can't afford to have it all in.
So I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about financial literacy, and we started with student loan rates and the burden of student loans and how do you manage them. We moved into credit, you know, not really understanding what it means not to pay off something right away. If you were speaking to young people, Jackie Brisky is a CPA, and we also have Rebecca here from the Alaska Commission on Higher Education, really an expert on student loans. So please feel free, folks, to call if you've got questions about that. But say you have a 17-year-old and you're going to introduce this concept of credit to them. You know, it's important to use credit cards, isn't it?
It is important to use credit cards, because that's how you establish your credit. We were talking earlier about your credit score. And if you don't have credit, you don't have a credit score. So you do need to establish credit, but it's using the credit wisely and managing that credit. So the biggest thing is to really get a handle on what money you have coming in and what your expenses are. So we won't use that B word, but you do have to have a handle on what's coming in and what's going out.
What's the best way to get a handle on that?
Really, the best way to get a handle on it is to sit down and look at your past few months and just think about it. Just take, 15, 20 minutes and think about, what do I spend on groceries? What do I spend on my vehicle? What do I spend on housing costs? What do I spend on entertainment? The income is usually the easiest thing because that's...
You get a paycheck.
You get a paycheck, and they tell you how much there is.
Yeah.
The outgo is, especially if you're not really meticulous about record keeping, it's a little more difficult to do. But I can suggest a website that I like really well. It's called Mint.com. And Mint.com allows you, you can go in and sign up for the use of the website. It will link all of your accounts, your credit card accounts, your banking accounts, everything together in one, and it pulls the information from those banks and from those credit cards into one place, and it will categorize things for you.
You know, my daughter called me. I have a 25-year-old. And she called me about this website, and I had the same reaction as those people at the Bear Paw Festival. I was like, whoa, you're going to put all of your information on one website. And I think there was some possibilities, too, that you could make a commitment to save a certain amount, and if you met that goal, something good happened. I think she got a little bit of money, and I was very suspicious of it. Now I feel really bad. I should have said, good idea. So, I mean, you don't have any concerns about...
I think you always have to be careful when you're putting information, personal information, online. There's a lot of people who have been victims of identity theft, and it's really not fun when you have to deal with that. So you have to be careful, and you have to make sure that your computer is secure. The website is secure, and it's as secure as any other website. I mean, there are banks that have been hacked into. There are huge, corporate entities that have been hacked into. That's the life, the environment that we live in.
Yeah.
But you take the precautions that you can take on your own computer and having the antivirus up to date and all of that sort of thing. I don't have a problem with using that kind of a website to pull it all together.
Yeah. And so let me just ask you, how do you do it? You use Mint.com.
I do not.
Oh, you don't use Mint?
because I'm a very detailed paper freak.
Oh, okay.
And so I use a similar type program on my own computer.
Okay.
Where I pull all the information in and
okay, that's legit. I thought you're telling us to do something that you wouldn't do, but you just do it differently.
I do it differently.
But what's your process? Do you do it every night when you come home?
Oh,
do
Lord,
you,
no.
Once a week? Do you do it at the end of the month? And do you ever slack off?
I do it periodically throughout the year. And yes, I do slack off.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this big push. It drives my husband nuts because I'll come up to him and say, you had this grocery receipt from Fred Meyer back in
that's
you
what
know,
my husband
in
does
June
to me.
What was this notation here? Because they never put down exactly what you're buying. They
right.
put some kind of cryptic description. And he'll look at it and go, I don't know, it was three months ago.
That happens to me as well. My husband will come in and he'll say, last July you were here. I don't think I bought this, so it must be you. And I'm like, oh, gosh, I have no idea. And I've sometimes said, nope, wasn't me. And we do the research, and it was me. It was Amazon.com or something like that. So we're going to take a little break. To our listeners, we're talking about financial literacy. That means credit cards. It means loan payments. It means buying a car, how to make good decisions about money. We have two wonderful guests in the studio, Rebecca. I'm going to struggle with your name, Rebecca. Help me.
Matrosova.
Matrosova. Thank you. And Jackie Brisky. And actually, I just got word that Colin Ryan, who is the comedian who was here is on the line. So when we come back from our break, we're going to meet Colin Ryan, who basically goes college to college and talks to folks about financial literacy. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and we're welcoming to the program a new guest, a new expert on financial literacy. Welcome, Colin Ryan.
Hello.
Hi. I welcome you to the show. We have two other people in the studio here today. We have Rebecca Matrasova and Jackie Brisky. They are experts either in student loans or in just, you know, Jackie is a CPA who can deal with any decade of your life and what you're doing with money. But I'm so pleased that you were able to call in. I heard your presentation to Alaska college students a few weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it. And I kind of wanted to find out, you know, why financial literacy is so important to you, why you've made it a mission. I also kind of curious what you think of what Alaska college students said to you. Do they sound like college students all over the country? So tell us a little bit about how you got into this field.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, and I've been listening so far, and just a lot of really great stuff has been shared. So I, as a listener as well, I found it very informative.
Good. Great. We're good.
I've been speaking for over 4 years now, and the topic of financial literacy was really kind of presented to me. It wasn't necessarily something that I sought out. I got a job as a workshop presenter in high schools, and what hit me right away, and the reason I share that is because my background, I think, is very important. I'm not a banker. I'm not an accountant. I'm the son of an accountant.
There might be some good genes in there.
I think so.
I could tell you some stories. But I've seen tax season secondhand, so that means not to become an accountant.
It is messy.
The reason I share that is I really am just a person who has a sort of a passing interest in finances until I got into this work. And so I really try and use that and try to come from that place. I think most people want to know about money, but struggle to feel invested in learning more about financial literacy, getting into the nitty-gritty and getting into the data and the sort of columns of numbers, and when your head starts to swim a little. I think that's where I try to live, is in that space where, you know, where do people stop becoming interested, and how do we bring them in a little more?
That's a great, I mean, that's where I'm at. I know it's, I get to refer to this as my eat your peas. I need to eat my peas. You know, I need to work on my budget. I need to be putting money away for retirement. I need not to go out for dinner on the way home from work because I'm just tired.
Yeah.
So what success have you had?
I mean, even the voice at which, you talk to yourself about money, you know, I know you're kidding, but I mean, that's the same voice that's in my head. And if you were to place that in a character, it would be the lecturing parent or the because I said so, whether you asked for it or not, authority figure. And that's part of our problem with money, is that we assume that it's sort of the end of our fun. It's where the misery begins and real life starts. And
right.
It's no wonder that we have such a strong negative reaction.
Well,
people bring up money.
How did you overcome that, or how do you help people overcome that?
Well, you know, for me, I just looked at my own life, and I don't know if this has been mentioned yet, but I kind of have two passions. I'm a speaker, but I'm also a stand-up comic. And, you know, in a nutshell, basically, the moment I did stand-up comedy, I thought, I will love this for the rest of my life. This is so hard and so scary and so rewarding, and I get to be totally me when I'm on stage. I don't have to do somebody else's script. I don't have to be anything other than the person that I want to be. I just got to make people laugh, right? So when you have that moment and you find something like that, your immediate thought is, well, how can I make that my life? What you're paid to do comedy, I mean, I couldn't even buy dinner with what I'm paid to do comedy. <half the time. laughs> So I'm in this situation where I'm like, it's a little bit exciting, a little bit heartbreaking. You're going, I love this. I can't make a living at it. What's going to help me? And I look at my own life, and I look back, and the one thing that allowed me to have the career that I've had is my ability to save money, to spend less, to budget, to save more money. You know, I mean, there's a lot of other factors. Obviously, you have to work hard. You got to get lucky. You got to have some raw ability. But you can also create a lot of time for yourself to grow in whatever your passion is if you save money. I mean, I see that as being a direct link.
Do you have difficulty, or do you think the audiences you speak to have difficulty resisting the advertising that makes them want things?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's on some level, Kathleen, you almost have to admire how sort of dark and twisted and effective our advertising culture is, because they are ramming the most like unethical messages down our throat, and we don't even protest. Mm-hmm. Because we go, oh, that's funny, or that had Justin Timberlake in it, and we give it a free pass. And you know, the one that cracks me up is, I saw an ad once, a Coke bottle, Coca-Cola ad, and it said open happiness. And there's a little TM above the word happiness. And I thought, how nice.
Trademark happiness.
Coca-Cola has trademarked happiness.
Yeah.
It's nice to know the real owner of joy and happiness.
Now we can start paying rent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Next time you're feeling good in your life, thank Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so to me, I just think, like, well, that's obviously a lie, and that's a ridiculous one. I mean, Coke can be used to remove rust from metal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we see so much of it. And more importantly, it speaks to what we really want that we let it in. And so, it's a weird thing to say, having just picked on Coke, but I use that kind of philosophy when I talk about financial literacy.
Yeah.
I want to talk about what you really want, because it's the only thing I really believe is going to compel you to really get into this stuff.
To do it.
For it for yourself.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to ask you, I promised I'd keep you on about 10 minutes, and we're just about there. I want you to leave us with something. Leave your primary audience, and maybe it's just save money, or maybe it's lighten up and save money. So what would you leave us with?
Yeah, it's so many things.
I know. It's hard.
I would have to say no. I mean, I would say that, personal finance, it really feels like a really high wall for a lot of us that we don't want to climb over. And I get it. And I can only say from my own experience, you know, I've lived that. What I discovered is it's really like anything that looks foreign and confusing to you. Like, you have to learn the language. And, you know, the example I give you is I took Greek in high school. I was going through some sort of overachiever spell. And classic Greek at 17 years old. And, you know, if you've ever seen Greek written, I mean, it looks like hieroglyphics. I mean, it's just these weird wavy symbols, and you don't know how to pronounce many of that. What I discovered is that it's a 24-letter alphabet, and the one that looks like a P sounds like an R, and the one that looks like an N sounds like an H, you know? And what you do is you learn the language. And once you do, you realize it's actually really straightforward. And I just think that's a pretty good analogy for money.
That's great. Once
once you understand that money flows in and out of your life, that you can control how much flows out of your life by cutting down your spending. You can control how much is in your life by improving your saving, by improving your job potential. You know, when you learn the basic concepts of money, when you understand interest, how it can work for you instead of against you, I think what you find is you open yourself up to a pretty fascinating world, the kind of world that Rebecca and Jackie live in, and thank God for people like them who
yes.
can really point us in the right direction.
Yes, yes. Well, Colin, I'm going to say thank you. I really appreciate it. I enjoy having the voice of a young person here, because certainly young people are facing lots of challenges with their finances. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to say thank you to you, and we're going to go back to Jackie and Rebecca. We're going to talk about some of the minefields and some of the sort of figuring out what the Greek letters really mean. So thank you so much, and thanks for coming all the way to Alaska, and thanks for joining our program today.
Thank you all very much. I had a great time meeting your students and seeing your beautiful state, and great time talking to you. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
All right. If you've just joined us and you're wondering why we had a comedian on a financial literacy show, it's because he's an expert on financial literacy and speaks to young people. But in the studio today, we have Rebecca Matrosova. I'm saying it wrong again. Say it again for me.
Matrosova. That's fine.
That's so much better. And Jackie Brisky. And during the break, we were talking about what to cover in the second half hour after we said hi to Colin. And Jackie, you are signaling to me you've got something you want to talk about.
I do. Colin touched on, you know, how to approach the debt issue. And I have a little story. This is a person that I know who started in November of 2011 attacking the debt. She's newly married, just found out she was pregnant, or it was just before she found out she was pregnant that her and her husband started attacking their debt. They had $13,000 in car and credit card debt, plus $100,000 in student loan between the two of them.
Oh, gasp.
And their income was combined about $135,000. As I said, she was pregnant. After the baby, she did not go back to work. They did have some luck in a buyout. She sold her company investment in the company that she was working for, the stock investments, and a little bit of help from their family. But in that 2-year period of time, they have paid down all of their debt.
Oh, my gosh.
$113,000. Now, keep in mind, after the baby, she didn't go back to work, so their income dropped from $135,000 to $86,000. And she said that what really happened was that they learned to live on one income. And when they learned to live on one income, it allowed her the freedom to make the decision after she had the baby to not have to go back to work.
Mm.
Which is what they wanted. That's what Colin was talking about. Determine what you want.
Right.
So now they are able to actually live on half of his income, with her staying home with the baby and
pay down that debt.
And the debt's gone. The
My
debt
gosh,
is gone.
I just want to say congratulations.
I think it's an exception.
It's kind of a heartwarming story. Like there is an answer.
There is, but it's hard work. And she said, we have not been on vacation in 2 years. And it's not that they have deprived themselves. They've just made smarter choices mm-hmm. about how they were spending their money.
Yeah, yeah. I know one of the things I saw Colin's show was the video, the classic video of the marshmallow and the four-year-olds, and what four-year-old can sit there in that room alone with the marshmallow, knowing that if they don't eat it, they get two later. And they were so funny. A little redheaded girl was eating it before the person was even out the door. She didn't even care what the rules were, you know? And there was an adorable little boy that he was, you know, scrunching up his face. He was, you know, making his hand stay away from the marshmallow. And he succeeded. And when the woman came in and gave him the second marshmallow, both went into his mouth immediately. So he had really struggled. But I think it's hard for us to delay our gratification. And that's a big part of why we're in this financial fix we're in. So
it is. And it's a huge part of just making yourself aware of all of the options that are out there and what financial literacy is exactly that. It's learning about not only who you are and how you spend money or make money, but what emotions trigger those spending habits.
Right. And I want to throw out our numbers again. Either people are just hanging on your every word, or they've already resolved this issue for themselves. But if you have questions for Rebecca related to student loans, she can deal with federal or state student loan questions, or Jackie, CPA, who's seen it all and guided people through much of it, give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Now, we were talking about Mint.com, and then, Rebecca, you said, I want to talk about some of the problems that students can sometimes have with online filing, was it?
Well, I think it's what it comes down to is, I think a couple of your comments and your conversations earlier talked about sort of this healthy suspicion that folks have of providing their information online or seeing something that's too good to be true. And, you know, to some extent that can be healthy. Sometimes it'll divert you from really positive resources. And, you know, one example that I just like to talk about that really illustrates that point beautifully is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or the FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you've got to watch for those pitfalls. There are sites out there like fafsa.ed.gov, which is the correct site, where you can file your FAFSA, and it is absolutely free. And you get evaluated for federal financial aid that can help you pursue a post-secondary education. There are also sites out there like fafsa.com, you can go through and you can fill out the exact same information, and you can get all the way to the end, and then they'll ask you for your credit card number so that you can pay a fee. And
ouch.
They can forward your information to the exact same free site.
So you just paid for them to send your stuff in.
Right.
Okay.
So there are pitfalls. There are things that you need to watch for, but if you're careful and if you get help and you seek advice, and there are folks out there, for example, our office offers walk-in success centers. We've got two locations in Anchorage and a toll-free number for anyone from anywhere across the state.
So you don't have to be alone in this struggle.
You don't have to be alone. You can have somebody look at that ending on that website with you and make sure you're in the right place.
Right.
But there is so much financial aid out there, and a lot of folks don't apply for it. I just came back from a conference where somebody from the Federal Department of Education presented, and he said that there are millions of dollars in Pell Grants, which are financial aid for students who have need, that students who would be eligible don't apply for, and mm-hmm. they just don't think they're eligible.
Wow.
We hear from...
This is the free money that people don't apply
for. This is the free money that people don't apply for.
Or walk away from, right. Or afraid of.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The FAFSA is also the application. A lot of people think, well, if I make a lot of money, the FAFSA is not for me. But the FAFSA is also your application for federal loans, which are the absolute lowest rates right now that you can get, whether you have need and you can get a subsidized loan, or whether you don't have the financial need and you can get an unsubsidized loan. The FAFSA is also the application for scholarship programs.
So once you fill the FAFSA, you can actually, okay. So it's not just for financial aid, it's also for scholarships. I just want to alert mm-hmm. you guys, we're starting to get calls and questions.
Oh, great. Okay.
So I'm going to go to the phones and welcome Dale to the phone, to the show. Hi, Dale.
Hello.
What's your question?
Two things I wanted to touch on. One, investors know about the rule of 72. That whatever return you're getting, 72 divided by your return is how long it takes to double your money.
Oh.
And the same thing applies to loans. So whatever your interest rate is on a loan divided into 72 is how long it takes before you're actually paying twice as much as you borrowed.
This is goes to Jackie's points. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you sound like you've got this wired.
Well, I'm lucky enough to have gotten into a trade union that has a great retirement, so... But I talk to a lot of young people who are not in that situation and are not saving money, and I tell them that part of the problem is that the word retirement is something that old people do, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that if you rename it, it's it might be something that you might want to do a little sooner. So if you start calling it the financial afterlife, and you know, the point is that once your investment income exceeds your expenses, you're in the afterlife, you know, and that's something you want to do as soon as possible.
Oh, that sounds great.
So,
yeah.
It just changes your attitude, might change their attitude towards saving for retirement.
Right. Those great points, Dale, really great points. And I had seen reference online. I was doing research for the show. I saw the 72 rule, but I did not know what it was. So thank you so much. That's great. Thank you, Dale. Really appreciate it. I'm going to go to, got some email questions coming in, and we've got these experts here. So I want to, how much money should be in my emergency fund? This might go to Jackie.
You know, your emergency fund, there's a lot of different opinions about how much you should have in your emergency fund. Many people say 6 months' expenses. That is a lot of money. And so if you don't have it, you say, oh, gee, there's no way I can have that
and
much.
And then you don't even
And
try.
You don't do anything. Mm-hmm. So you work toward that emergency fund. I talked with someone the other day who was very stressed out about a loan that he had, and he wanted to just pay off the loan, and he didn't have quite enough money to pay off the loan, but he thought it would be a good idea to take out all of the savings that he's accumulated and just pay down on the loan so that it went from $30,000 to $10,000. And I said to him, what are you going to do if something unexpected happens? You have no savings to fall back on.
No cushion.
So even though you're paying that $450 a month to pay off on that loan, continue to do that until you've built up your savings account more.
Okay. All right. So don't be afraid of it. Don't push it away. Start.
Just keep going, adding to it little at a time, and it will accumulate.
Eventually be 6 months' worth. Another question we got was, what portion of my monthly income should go toward necessities like rent, utilities, and food? What's a way to think about that?
Well, I think part of that depends on your income level. You know, when the financial institutions are looking at approving for a home loan, for instance, I think they use a factor of like 30 or 32%.
Of your monthly income should go for your necessities, like your rent, your mortgage,
your
food.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a student loan question here for you. So,
sure.
See, shortly after my husband and I got married, we consolidated our student loans, law school, and my master's degree. So his being more than mine, into one easy payment. A couple of years later, he passed away, and after many calls to the federal student loan office, I learned I would be paying off his law school debts for a very long time, as they could not unconsolidate our loan. It has been almost 10 years since he passed, and I am still working on paying off that debt. My daughter will be in college in 2 years, and I will still be paying that debt. I know there is no fix, but I did want to let your listeners know about potential problems with consolidating loans. Any comments on that? Thank you, by the way, to our listener, Jody.
Yeah, Jody, first off, I want to say my condolences, and I'm sorry to hear about your circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, it's always sad to hear stories like that and those impacts, and certainly consolidation has benefits for some, and it does bring with it challenges for others. For me personally, consolidation was a great choice because I was able to consolidate my student loans at a lower rate and make lower payments. I am familiar with another young lady who consolidated but received some bad advice and didn't realize that the interest rate she was consolidating her loans under was actually higher than the interest rate that she had on a couple of her original loans.
Jackie is shaking her head. She's seen this happen before, I think.
And yeah. So consolidation, I mean, and it's an important point to bring up. There certainly can be pitfalls with student loans. Generally, when you're looking at private loans, you may have more risks than federal loans and, for example, state loans. But even in the federal and the state arena, you do have to understand the parameters of the loans, and you have to understand what it is that you're getting into, because it is still an obligation. It is a debt that is going to need to be repaid, and there are very specific requirements attached to that. So for anyone, I appreciate you understand there's no fix right now, but for anyone who's considering consolidation or for who's considering taking out education loans and who isn't perhaps quite sure they understand all of the parameters or that they could use some advice understanding it better and what the potential implications might be, I would really encourage you to seek out some advice and some assistance.
You know,
that is available for free.
I would like, I mean, we have about 5 minutes left, and I really want to leave people with things they can take away from the show. For one thing, at alaskapublic.org, we've got some great resources. One Jackie pointed out to me was called 360
Financial Literacy.
And you, it's a free service. You can sign up, and you can start to, wherever you are in your life, whether you're a tween, or you're a college student, or you're a young married couple, or you're a homeowner, or you're getting ready to retire, you can find where you are in there and start putting your numbers in and figuring out where you are. So that you can find that. I think we have, there's some videos for students on Rebecca's site that really have college students talking about the loan issues and there's and credit and how to not get kind of caught.
How to keep college costs low, how to keep your loan costs low.
Right.
How
right.
to create a budget in the college
that
mindset.
B-word.
The big B word that we don't.
The big scary B word.
Yeah.
How much debt is right to borrow. So.
Yeah. And one of the things I put on the website was an interview with Jimmy Wales, who is the founder of Wikipedia. And someone asked him, well, what's the biggest piece of advice you could give young people today? And his advice was very clear. Live beneath your means, because that is the only way you will ever have freedom to do what you want to do. And that kind of goes right to Colin's point, which is, and the way Jimmy was putting it is, you know, you get out of college, you've got your first job, you get the best apartment you can find, and you buy the classy car that you've been waiting all these years for. And 6 months down the line, when you hate that job, you've got those payments and you're kind of stuck.
Yep, you're tied to it.
Yeah. So that's really something we want to leave people with, that notion of, give yourself freedom. And Rebecca and I were talking about Alaskans love freedom, but here's one way to get freedom, you know, is to sort of use your money well so that you're not trapped.
Well, you're trapped to you're trapped or tied to your job, you're tied to your credit cards, you're tied to that loan. You've got to make the money, you've got to make the payment, and you really are a slave.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hate that thought. And you know, for a young person
it's
to
depressing.
Think, yeah, for the next rest of my life, I'm going to be paying $450 a month or whatever, you know, so try to avoid those traps. I'm trying to think what other resources we've got on the web. There's just stuff to be helpful. There was a New York Times story this morning about a new book called Scarcity, and it was really talking about people who are under pressure because of money, the kinds of decisions they make that are poor because they feel pressured. And it wasn't that they're less intelligent. It's simply that they are occupying more of their bandwidth with the concern of this. So that's another reason to sort of push it away a little bit and stay on top of it, as Colin said, you know. And I guess I'm kind of encouraged that it's not that hard. Okay. I want to thank you guys so much for coming today. We had a really good hour talking about financial literacy, how to be smart about it, how to wrap our heads around it. I want to thank our listeners and callers and our guests. Rebecca
Petrosa.
Thank you. From the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And Jackie Brisky, a certified public accountant and a real financial literacy outreach person. And Colin Ryan, who does the college circuit on financial aid for young people. Next week on Hometown Alaska, welcome Charles Warforth, who will be doing a show about seeing Alaska through our shoes. That should be interesting. Please connect with us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Our website is alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Platt was our audio engineer today. Thanks so much for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.